Greetings, you're listening to St. Paul's Unseen Dimension. That's a bit of a long intro. Listening to Rush from the Farewell to Kings album, Cygnus X1, Book 1, The Voyage. It's been one of those days, folks. One of those days. One of those days where I did almost absolutely nothing except write and work on dumb stuff. And take trips down to memory lane and all kinds of other stuff. But anyway, this is like one of the best riffs ever. Geddy Lee, Neil Peart, and Alex Lifeson. Just fantastic band. But anyway, before I get into this a little bit too far, how you doing today? Because today is Sunday, the January 23rd. And I'm gonna have to kill this here, because otherwise I'll listen to the whole damn song and I won't get to really talk about much of anything. Not that that wouldn't be a good thing or a bad thing. I'm sure that there's some people out there that would prefer that I just let the music run and just do a DJ thing. I just love this riff. It's amazing. It has a nice pull to it, you know? Oh, man. It's taking me back to 1979. Jesus, man, I'm old. Anyway, where was I going? Oh yeah, it's Sunday, January 23rd. The year is 2022. I'm your host. My name is Tom, and just doing something interesting tonight. Doing a little bit of science fiction stuff. Mostly because I watched a film that I hadn't seen in almost 40 years, The Black Hole, Walt Disney's The Black Hole with Maximilian Schell, Robert Forrester, Yvette Mimieux, Ernest Borgnine, Anthony Perkins, not Anthony Hopkins. It would have been a completely different film if Anthony Hopkins had played Anthony Perkins' part. And this other guy whose name I can barely remember, who played Charlie Pizer. The thing is that movie, I don't know if this song and that movie are associated in any way, what shape or form. I know for a fact that it's probably not. But I watched this film, and as a kid, I just remember being kind of bored to tears compared to Star Wars, you know. And with the whole idea of finding an abandoned ship in space, right on the edge of a quantum singularity, a black hole, having beaten the gravitational pull of it, working out the complicated math in order to go through it, having been lost for 20 plus years, you know, and you find this one guy with his killer robot named Maximilian, along with a host of what ended up being, if you haven't seen this movie, this is going to be spoiler time, but if you find out what he did to his crew, and it's pretty ghastly, and there's some really screwed up stuff in this, but here's the thing, is that when you get to the end of this film, right? Oh, hang on a second, I gotta listen to this part. This part's awesome. See the star that would not die. Man, just, this is what music used to be, you know? Oh my God. You will never, we will never have this again. Not in my lifetime. We will never have a band like Rush ever again in my lifetime. Because that's genius. That is genius. Anyway, I'm going to go ahead and kill that. I am going to kill it. I'm going to keep pressing buttons until I can get that music to stop. I'm not kidding. I'm at that point now where I hate everything. The only good music is old music, and science fiction used to tell stories. So I'm watching this movie, The Black Hole, Walt Disney, and as I stated, this is going to be nothing but spoilers for this film. And because, I mean, I figure if you haven't seen this and you're my age, you haven't done your due diligence. Now, if you'd seen Star Wars, The Black Hole was gonna come off as being kind of a low rent knockoff, and it kind of was on a lot of levels. The the sheer amount of money spent on Star Wars versus what was spent on The Black Hole, night and day difference. Model shop, completely different. Animation sequences, completely different. The cast and characters and all of that stuff, just, you know, a completely different story for a completely different audience. However, this is the one thing about Disney films, is that every once in a while, they'll slip in some subversive stuff, and all of a sudden, you don't know really what you're looking at. And so, you get through this thing, you find out that Hans Reinhardt, this whack job who took over his ship because his crew said, perhaps we shouldn't fly into the black hole. And he says, nonsense, we will fly through it and to beyond. And when his crew mutinies, he turns them all into a bunch of robotic synths, essentially. You know, like basically zombies, space zombies. You know, not alive, not dead, but just going through the motions and running the ship. Saved a lot of time, effort, and money, and food. You know, keeping people alive and shit. And so, you find this out, of course, because you're part of this. You know, there's this other expedition called the Palomino. They ended up having a course correction. They find out there's a black hole there. They go in to look and investigate, and then they find the ship. And then it's like, whoa, let's really check this out. And, you know, of course, there's that one voice of reason that says, you know, maybe we shouldn't do this. And you know what happens? That guy gets overruled by the clown posse that he's with. And because, you know, one of his shipmates lost her dad on that particular ship. And so, therefore, they all decide to go see where dad went. And it turns out that bad things happened to dad. I actually speculate that the test pilot that was on the probe ship was actually McCrae. That's my honest belief, because he was important to Hans Reinhardt, who had his mechanical friend Maximilian, who was basically his strong-arm Gestapo guy, which is ironic because the guy that plays Reinhardt, he was a little bit of a German guy. So anyway, as we get into the story, we find out that from an old robot that bad things had happened on board the ship. There was a mutiny. He turned them into zombies. And only he was the one left alive while the rest of the crew is basically zombies. And there was the big tell when you saw this one zombie limping away. And I thought, oh, holy shit, that's creepy. You know, Ernest Borgnine's character is trying to figure out whether or not he's talking to a robot and all that other stuff, and he's not. And then, as it would be, Anthony Perkins, the guy that wants to really hang out with Dr. Reinhardt, go into the black hole, he's the one that after is he's told that there's something wrong here, he pulls one of the masks off of the undead, and then that's when shit goes to pot, and that's when, you know, Maximilian starts killing people. And then Hans Reinhardt directs the ship to go into the black hole after lying to everybody because he's crazy. And then, of course, a giant TV comes down on top of Reinhardt, crushes him, but holds him in place. And then, you know, of course, the ship starts breaking apart as it's being drawn into the black hole, and only the probe ship, the one ship that they already sent to the black hole and has come back unscathed, is the one the remaining crew gets on, which is, you know, Robert Forrester, Yvette Mimieux, the one guy whose name escapes me, and Vincent the Robot. So they're all on board that ship. And they end up going through the black hole. You know, they go through this basic time tunnel, essentially. And then they come out the other side to, you know, what amounts to being almost like heaven, right? But we don't see that until after we get this tour of Hans Reinhardt floating through space, then having a strange rendezvous with Maximilian the Robot. And then all of a sudden, he's like spliced with Maximilian. His eyes and head are inside the robot, but his body clearly couldn't have fit in there, you know. And he is on top of a giant kind of like an outcropping of rock in what looks like hell. And all of his crew, the crew that was turned into zombies, are all still serving him in hell. And I'm thinking, whoa, what the fuck is this? And thinking of this, I remember the one scene, but I didn't remember all of this being as weird as it came out, you know. And of course, you know, they get to the other side, and you know, there's this kind of an eclipsed world in front of them. And all I could think to myself is, like, we don't know that planet is a livable environment. There's no supplies on board the ship. How soon does it happen that the crew has to resort to cannibalism? That's the question that I have. Unless Dr. Hans Reinhardt was a genius and just happened to stow a bunch of food in there. So that was kind of how I spent my day, watching that in the background while I was working on some other stuff. And I had this epiphany about a lot of films that I saw as a kid. There were a lot of interesting moral life lessons to be taught. If, like this one was a great example. Never fly in space with people who are crazier than you are. If you happen to show up at the doorstep of a crazy old man with a bunch of zombies that are running a spaceship, perhaps you shouldn't stick around to find out how well that goes for you. Maybe you should just, hey, we just need some parts. Get the fuck out of here. And we have this one idiot friend of ours who might want to stay with you. We're just going to tell you in advance, he can stay. But we're getting the fuck out of Dodge. We don't need to do anything. You just bring us the parts. We're good. That's all you have to do. Don't want to talk to any of your crew. It's none of our business what kind of labor dispute you've had here or how you solved it. It's not our responsibility. We're prime directive here. We just don't care. We're leaving, you know. Rather than, you know, we've got to see how this works out. You know, it's like, look, I'm intellectually honest about where my curiosity starts and stops when it comes to other people's business. And if I just happen to be in space and I've got a space mystery like this, there's a reason why this guy went unopposed for 20 years on board of his ship. He had a killer robot to kill anyone that got in the way. And then he had other robots that did his bidding as well. So I guess the moral of that story is, if you know a guy and he's got a bunch of killer robots at his disposal, and you just so happen to roll up on his doorstep and you've made an error in judgment, your best course of action is to just simply obey the rules, get the fuck out, and then tell someone else who might be able to do something about to affect change. Don't take it upon yourself to start a fight. Yeah. No, I don't know. I think that's the life lesson that was meant to be told, as opposed to a plucky robot can do a lot of things and possibly take you to a parallel universe without really meaning to. Roddy McDowell plays the the voice of Vincent, the robot, and Slim Pickens was the voice of Bob, the old robot that was in various shades of disrepair. I gotta tell you, you know, my childhood was pretty full of really amazing stuff. It really is. And I give a lot of credit to the movie studios and to the musicians that made my childhood, adolescence, and young adulthood so special. I really do. Because without those influences, I would not have the imagination that I do now. Not saying that I have an overactive imagination. I'm simply saying that I embraced my creativity to become an artist and to be a writer. And as the result of that, of all of those really good influences, I know what is good and what is not. And I can tell you right now, what we're seeing culturally speaking, it's a wasteland. There's very few good things out there that will get your attention, you know, that's actually worth watching or worth listening to. And from my perspective, I'm very choosy about how I spend my time and how I choose to waste it, you know, if I want to be amused or whatever. And, you know, I'm not being negative so much as I just would like to see a return to a kind of quality and imagination that wasn't groupthink, corporate, engineered tripe that's guaranteed to make a buck, you know. And by virtue of the fact that they made a brand new Batman movie, and we didn't really need any more, but we've got them, where you have Rob Pattinson playing Batman, and I have this really great idea of stringing together, you know, a connection between Rob Pattinson playing Batman and David Bradley playing the guy that was working in Hogwarts as a janitor, secretly Bruce Wayne. I'm telling you, it's uncanny how much those guys look alike. Rob Pattinson could be like young Hugh Jackman. Hugh Jackman could be older Rob Pattinson. And Rob Pattinson and Hugh Jackman could be young David Bradley, because they all have the same facial features and just different stages along that, you know, that chain. I'm not kidding. Just do your due diligence. Take a look at these people and tell me I'm wrong. You know, it could be son, dad, and grandpa, you know, out there in the world having a buddy conflict. All three of those guys, you know. It's just something to think about. I have to let a buddy of mine know that I'm recording a podcast, because he apparently decided that tonight was a good time to call me right as I'm recording. Sorry about that, bud. Not my friend, bud. Different friend. And I'm having yet another Mango Loco Monster Energy drink because, well, I've ran out of Twinkies and ivermectin. So there it is. If you listened to last night's podcast, I'm sure that you probably have some questions. Yeah, I do too. I'm having one of those days where I'm like, do I really regret having said any of that? Not really. Oh my God. This is the most amazing drink on the planet. Because it has that balance and flavor that I really like, and I think it would actually go quite well with vodka. But I don't need any alcohol to enhance my personality. I got a bit of a sniffle, mostly because I'm downstairs and it's very dusty and cruddy down here. And I've got to do some rearranging down here because I've got a lot of stuff happening that's going to be life-changing, as a matter of fact. I've got art that I'm doing that's a lot more involved, actually. Doing some sculpture work again. And I'm launching a line of toys that I'm going to produce on my own. Because, you know, it's one thing to play with other people's stuff and hope that someone in some company's legal department is going to say, yeah, sure, we'll license that. As opposed to create your own characters, create your own fan base, and create your own damn toys. Todd McFarlane did it. Why couldn't I? And the thing of it is I mean, it's in it, and that's the one nice thing about McFarlane toys is that they will help you produce a toy line. So I have a lot of respect for those guys. I really do. I do. I haven't talked to any of those guys in a long time, but I'm hoping to reopen that gateway of communication again. Because there's some fantastic people there. maybe one of those days. Who knows? I'm sure that there'll be some group of cancel culture morons out there that'll be like, let's just call and kill his hopes and dreams. Because, you know, we're a powerful lynch mob of beta males. God, I love the world we live in. You can have your hopes and dreams crushed by strangers because they just simply... they want to hurt you. How dare you have hopes and dreams? Look at Aaron Rodgers. He crushed everyone's hopes and dreams. And, you know, it wasn't because he was unvaxxed or any other stuff. It was because he just, I want to say he didn't have the support of special teams. I'm not much of a football guy. I really don't give a shit about sports, but in the case of Aaron Rodgers, I kind of feel bad for the guy because, you know, here he was. He did all the right things, and he didn't do what I did, you know, when it came to beating COVID. So why does that guy pay a penalty? Is it because he's a celebrity? It's hard to say. It really is. Because the narrative is starting to finally break down. Don't get me wrong. I believe that there is a nasty, nasty variant, you know, of COVID and the flu and all that stuff. And I believe that this stuff is the majority of it. I used to think it was actually just all bullshit, but after I caught it, then I was like, oh, there's something to this, obviously. And that's the one thing about being intellectually honest is that once you're shown what the reality of things are, then you either acquiesce to reality or you double down and deny it. Well, I'm one of those people that I'll own it and, you know, move on from there. Just not rail against I'm not one of those to tilt at windmills. Once I know what something is, then I just, okay, I get it. And, you know, it took some effort. I'm still fighting it, but it's not like it's not like it was when it first started, because I honestly thought I was going to die of something else, not a cold or a cough. I thought I was dying of some kind of intestinal fucking pancreatic cancer shit. At least that's the way it made me feel. And then as it would turn out, it was just this thing attacking every organ in my body. And I thought, is this really how I want to go out? You know, and then, of course, like I said, I had a complete overhaul of my thinking and rationale. So, but I don't need to belabor that point. But getting back to what I started the show about, it's amazing how media from your childhood and teen years, you can remember it. with so little effort. Like that song, Cygnus X1, I actually was able to sing along just fine with it. I hadn't heard that song in, 30 years or more, at least. And what kills me is, you know, it's still in my head, and it's very fresh in my mind. It's like I know the lyrics and I know all of it. And yet, at the same time, there are songs I've heard in the last 5 years that I wish I could just dump out of the memory block because, you know, they're so pointless, you know. But that's just music. Music is, again, the conduit and gateway to our memories. And I think, to a lesser degree, it has the ability to make us communicate with that younger self, or even to a degree our older selves. I still believe that music has a vibrational quotient that resonates with us to either one end of our life or the other. And that's why songs are so powerful and so meaningful. And I think that's the same. I think there's a certain amount of that comes with television shows, movies, and that sort of thing. Any kind of media, books especially, I think. I remember rereading an old book that I hadn't read since, I was, my God, probably 13, 14. And I remember reading it, just being totally enraptured by it, and then reading it as an adult, and I'm like, wow, I must have not really been that difficult to entertain as a kid. Because, you know, I've become a lot more sophisticated in my choices of literature and stuff. And plus, I read a lot of nonfiction, so there's, you know, I mean, it's kind of a mixed bag. But I honestly believe that you have this ability to communicate along your timeline. The problem is making your younger or older self understand what it is you're trying to communicate. That, I think, is the real problem. You have to know yourself well enough to know that you have to break the information down into small digestible chunks. And so that way, every time you chat back and forth with yourself along the timeline, that you can make sense of it all. And I've talked about this before. I had an ex who died, and there was an episode of the show called Fringe, where Peter Weller was the antagonist, and he was. The actual episode is called White Tulip. I recommend everybody see it because it has an interesting time travel story behind it. And I think the hardest part about watching that was knowing that it had some kind of familiarity to it that I couldn't quite quantify. And, you know, my ex passed away. She was killed in a car accident. And even though we'd been apart for years, it still hurt, you know, because, I mean, we were still friends and still, you know, still close and all that. And as subsequently, after her passing, you know, her mom and dad have both passed, and I've lost an entire family just of people who were really good. And so, you know, if I had a way of transmitting data, you know, from here and now back into the past, like to, let's say, to when I first met her, you know, to spare myself some of the grief, or maybe spare them the grief, especially it would be more to spare them, because her dad, Larry, was, he really suffered at the end, because he lost his daughter, and then he lost his wife, and then he was basically alone. And, you know, it's tragic. It's especially when you're an old person and you have no one, no grandkids, no nothing. It's very difficult. And that's probably going to be me one of those days. You know, I don't have any family to speak of. And, you know, I don't think that I'm going to be surrounded by nieces, nephews, or grandkids or any of that stuff. It's not going to happen. It's just not in the cards. And it doesn't change the way that I feel about my future. It just makes me very sad that somewhere along the way, future me or younger me wasn't able to figure out some information along the way. There was some confusion, I guess, along the communication lines. So if I had that to do over, I would transmit in, unless, you know, it did work and there's a parallel world where I have a family, or there's a future where I'm you know, on the wasteland and being hunted by robots. I mean, it could go either way at this point. Parallel universes being what they are, sometimes changing the past can ultimately change the present and change the future. If only I knew how. Oh, well. Today's been one of those days of introspection. It's also been one of those days of, what the fuck did I watch today? You know, I mean, I didn't really understand the strange ending of The Black Hole. And I don't wonder it didn't do so well in theaters, because there were people that came out of that going, what the fuck did I just watch? Suddenly, I understand my audience oh so well. The hell did I just listen to? There's an interesting thought, an interesting story along the way, and then it fell apart at the end, and then I feel stupid for having endured it. No, I'm kidding. I've been interested to see if, by putting the link back up on my primary website, whether or not that would actually change the audience flow on this podcast. And so far, it's been a fat goose egg, so I don't know. I think the fact that I don't monetize probably doesn't hurt the podcasters that are putting that stuff out there. You know, I mean, they're probably making money off of clicks or something. I know I'm not. But if I imagine if I monetized it, I would probably have more listeners, but I wouldn't be able to do some of the things that I do, like you know, subject you to music that a lot of folks don't get to listen to. I actually love iTunes. I do, mostly because I'm able to I'm just able to go find all kinds of really cool stuff, you know, and just things that you would not really come into contact. Some really obscure artists, and if you talk to a lot of folks that have a very broad net as far as like music goes, you can find some really beautiful stuff, really interesting stuff too. And that's kind of where I'm at now. I look for the obscure and I look for the interesting, and you know, anything that tugs on my emotional heartstrings, it's always good, you know. And but if it's, you know, one of those things that's where it's gonna, you know, attack my intellect or something like that, and you know, make me have to regress and sound like a half-wit, well, then I'm going to take a big pass on that. I don't know. There's like, I've got, I even have some Billy Joel, you know, my God. This is some old stuff. I remember there was this, if you've ever watched the old TV show, Son of Svengoolie, when I was a kid, you got to listen to this song. This song was great. This is the way they would close out the show with this song. And I got a big kick out of that. I mean, it's just, you know, childhood stuff, you know. And he actually used to do a lot of Weird Al Yankovic stuff, too, back in the day. I don't know. Childhood and nostalgia is not such a bad thing sometimes. But mad props to Billy Joel. you know, it's cool stuff. But it's, but again, when you're listening to stuff like this, this is the work of a genius. This is when music actually had some value to it. It actually required some intellect, and people had to rhyme and you know, put together and compose music. And this guy was actually a brilliant piano player, Billy Joel. You know, there are a few bands, there are a few artists right now that I think are in that category of genius. Tool, I think, is one of those. There's a few others, but that's kind of where I was going with some of this stuff. Is that I think music is indeed the conduit of our memories, and the more we listen to music, the more music we have to enrich our lives, the more waypoints we create along our life path. And I think because of that, we're able to learn a lot faster. You know, that's just a thought, just a random thought that I had. But, you know, it is what it is. And tonight's podcast will probably be a little short since I did one last night. We did have one little bit of excitement this evening. And I actually slept through it, too. I was taking a bit of a nap. But apparently somebody rolled up over here off of the side street and unloaded a bunch of bullets into a car. And I'm just thinking to myself, how did I sleep through this? How did I not hear this? You know, gunshots, five shots into a car and casings in the snow and all of this. And I didn't hear or see anything. It's crazy. I mean, normally, I'd be like, gunshots, you know, holy crap. You know, then I'd be donning the battle armor and then, you know, arming up and then going outside saying, hey, put that gun down, you stupid gangster. No, I wouldn't be actually doing any of that shit. I'd be like, you know, this is not my argument to get myself involved in. I think I'm going to hide behind this nice, heavy wall that I've got. Because after all, what is that? Discretion is the better portion of valor. That's the word of the day, and discretion. You know, you don't go outside, you know, unless you're a first responder or you're kitted up and you're ready to go, you know, to go out there and do battle with somebody who's actually opposing a threat to society. But in this case, somebody just took it out on another person's car and shot it up. And all I could think to myself was like, well, if only I had my piece of shit Jeep parked where that car was, I could have written it off like an act of terrorism or something like that. And it's like, why can't that happen to me? You know, isn't that stupid? Isn't that just the dumbest thing to be, you know, to be wishing for something like that, to get rid of a car? Oh, my God. It's just crazy. But in the end, it's all about me because, you know, this is what this podcast is about. Just another crazy narcissist out there just spreading his mental illness, you know. As I stated before, the CIA was like spending money hand over fist, you know, to find out what's on the minds of Americans and stuff like that. And I thought, oh, you know, and I said it before, what they really ought to do is just give everyone a fucking podcast and you'd have all kinds of fucking data to pull from. But, again, that's just me. Give everyone a podcast. Let them air their grievances. Talk shit and all that other stuff. I guarantee it, you know. It'd be a field day for the lawyers, you know. Or at the very least, you know, might settle some stuff out. People might actually go, hey, maybe I'm a dickhead. Maybe I should apologize for some of the things I've done, you know. Again, another stream of consciousness podcast out the door. I don't know. Hope you're having a fantastic week. I think I'm going to go ahead and put a pen in this because I don't really have anything to add, although I would like to close this out with some really cool music. I just don't know what to throw at you on the way out. Let's see here. What's a good way to empty out a brain as you're
saying goodbye. Let me see here. Oh, where the hell is it? Jesus. You know, I have such a diverse... oh, I know. And, wait. This is how I'm going to end it out. There we go. Here we go, folks. Good night, everybody.